the vibes. I'm in shock. This is the Hoop Genius podcast brought to you by NBA 2K26 with Mo Mousi and the legendary two-time NBA champion coach Brendan Sir. And the New York Knicks went to San Antonio and they didn't just steal one, they stole both games. A nail biter, 105 to 104 victory for the New York Knicks, who I repeat from the last episode, have not lost a basketball game since April 23rd. The Cinderella story continues. Coach Sir, immediate reaction.
13 wins in a row, never seen anything like it before. I thought there would be no chance for the Knicks to win tonight. They go down double digits again in the first half. They close the gap by halftime again. They're such a resilient group. They're the better defensive team of the two right now, in my opinion. They're really good defensively. You know, they figured out a way to play against them. San Antonio, they are. I can't. Ooh.
They in trouble.
Best thing for them to do, I can tell you right now, is to go on the road.
Yeah.
It sounds funny, I know, but that's the best thing that happened to them.
Yeah. Let's start from the beginning. The Spurs began this game very intentfully. Full court pressing on defense. Much better ball movement on offense. They were getting into the paint, spraying to the shooters. And it's kind of the San Antonio Spurs basketball that you're used to seeing. And it worked so well that they got into the bonus. The Knicks had already put them into the bonus with like 6 minutes left in the first quarter. And the Spurs extended pressure of their defense all the way up into the backcourt, was causing Jalen Brunson to step out of bounds, Miles McBride to have a backcourt violation. And after the first quarter, they were up 34 to 25, shooting 62% from the field. And you're watching it and you're thinking, wow, the Spurs, you know, they let game one slip. Now they're locked in and they're doing what they're doing. Second quarter, Stephon Castle gets his third foul with 7 minutes to go. The Knicks cut the lead from double digits to just a one possession game. The Knicks have continued this trend, Coach. You know, I floated the idea after game one that they were playing with pace because they knew the Spurs had tired legs from the Western Conference Finals. But the real reason they're playing with pace is because they don't want the Spurs defense to get set. Because as we've talked about on this show, they have elite perimeter defenders and they have the best shot blocker in all of the NBA. So if they're playing with such pace that the defense can't get set in a half court setting, then it favors the Knicks. And the other thing that the Knicks are doing is they are moving the basketball better than the Spurs. You know, when we talk about like the 2014 Spurs and how they move the ball in the half court when the game slows down, the Knicks are the team who are doing the better job with that. And what that means is Wemby, who plays like a free safety if he's guarding Josh Hart and he's coming off Josh Hart to kind of defend everyone, they're driving and kicking and moving the ball so much that Wemby is constantly moving for the up to 24 seconds that he's playing defense. And you could see in that first half, he was getting worn out.
Yeah, I think the strategy is to make him get worn out. And it's a good strategy. He gets gassed early, Wemby. Yeah. And I talked to someone that plays with him and basically said he does not have endurance, almost alluded to, has a condition where he can't go.
Yeah.
Play hard for long periods
of time. You can't have everything. Yeah. It would be unfair.
But I'll tell you what, he's struggling right now in a big, big way.
Yeah, the Knicks had a 16-point turnaround and they were up by four at halftime. And the third quarter was where I realized the Knicks have already won this series, because there was a stretch of minutes where Brunson, Cat, and OG, who, by the way, dunked on Wemby, he has no fear. Brunson, Cat, and OG were on the bench, right? And we talked about the Spurs winning the Wemby minutes. But the Knicks won the non-Brunson, Cat, and OG all at the same time minutes because Shamet was huge, Bridges was huge, Josh Hart was having an impact, Mitchell Robinson was playing well, Deuce McBride, he was okay. But like, it got me thinking, Coach, about the butterfly effect of all of these things. One of the first things you and I spoke about in this series of the show at the very start of the season was Malcolm Brogdon. And he was on the Knicks, and he chose to retire. And I think about how one little roster move can make such impact, because if Malcolm Brogdon hadn't retired, I don't think Landry Shamet is even on the Knicks, let alone playing minutes in the finals. He played 30 minutes. And if you look at the box score, if you didn't watch the game and you wake up and it's like, Landry Shamet, 13 points, 5 of 12 on field, cool. That doesn't reflect the impact that he had on this game. His impact was monumental. So it's interesting to me, the kind of butterfly effect. So, Coach, let's break down, before we talk about the fourth quarter, let's break down something that, you know, a lot of people have noticed watching this series. The Spurs are opting to throw two defenders at Jalen Brunson to take the ball out of his hands. And the Knicks are doing a great job of finding open shooters off that. And also off that, because two defenders are now so high up going to trap on Jalen Brunson, the Spurs are giving up a lot of offensive rebounds. They gave up 10. They lost the offensive rebound battle by 5. They lost the total rebounding battle by only 2 in this game. But that's a problem for the San Antonio Spurs to deal with. If you're coaching the Spurs, do you stick with your strategy of doubling Brunson, or do you go to single coverage? Because they went to that in the fourth and it helped them get back in the game.
Yeah, they're picking their spots to double team them. What they're really bothering Brunson with and what they wore him down with tonight was, my opinion, was their full court, very physical defense on him. The referees tonight allowed them to have their hands all over him. I mean, they are hand-checking the daylights out of him, which I don't have a problem with if they had just announced it to the rest of the league that you were allowed to play like that. Mm-hmm. And so they're just letting him. They're fouling.
This is the finals.
They're fouling every time up and down the court, but they're not calling it. And I thought that was their way to let the Spurs, frankly, back in the series. I really do.
Well, it didn't work.
And it worked. I mean, they got them back in there because it was 14 points ready to go to 20 points, and they just manhandled them to get back in the game. But I think they're, you know, the biggest thing for me is Karl-Anthony Towns.
Right now, he's my finals MVP. He's been the best player on the floor through 2 games. Yeah. I don't think anyone saw that coming.
No, absolutely not. He's rebounding the heck out of the basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And he's playing big. Here's the thing. The Knicks are a mature team that knows how to play. The other guys are frenetically running around with their head chopped off half the time. They take terrible shots. The wrong players are taking shots. They take too many threes. They act like it's a regular season game. This is not. This is every possession matters.
Yeah. So if you're just waking up and listening to this podcast before you've watched the game, Wembanyama finished with 29 points, 9 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals, 4 blocks. But here's the thing. He had 4 turnovers, but it felt like a lot more than 4 turnovers. He had an awful first half. I think this might be the first time we've ever said anything bad about Victor on this show. He had an awful first half. And he bounced back in the second half, which is great. However, this is the NBA Finals. You can't afford for that to happen. And what Kenny was talking about during the game, Kenny Smith, he was saying, and Charles Barkley, they were saying that, you know, Wemby looks like he's been punched in the face. Not literally, but, you know, metaphorically punched in the face. He looks shook. He looks rattled.
He used the word shock.
There we go. That's the one.
Shocked.
Yeah, because he was making uncharacteristic passes, turnovers, decisions. 11 of 21 from the field, 2 of 6 from 3. And like, we've spoken about this before and we'll speak about it again. He is way too far away from the hoop on a lot of the offensive possessions. And the Spurs in general take so many looks that are a surprise to me. They wouldn't be a surprise to me if someone in a Celtics jersey shot them, or if someone in a Hornets jersey shot them, or if someone in a Bulls jersey shot them. But for a San Antonio Spurs organization who plays a certain style, that I've not seen this to this level throughout the playoffs so far. Do you get what I'm saying? Like against OKC, yeah, there wasn't that many shots. I'm like, why are you shooting that?
This is not the Greg Popovich offense.
No, but even against OKC.
No, they're running the same way. They don't run any set plays.
Mm.
None.
But it's like they have a lack of patience on the offensive side of the basketball.
Yeah, and that's what happens, what we call five-out basketball. And in soccer, I'm sure there's a style of play. Basically, it's to play very fast, to open up the court. Space and pace is the BS that is used. and let's beat the defense down the court to get a good shot. Yeah, except that in the finals, you don't get to fast break much, and the defense on a good team like the Knicks is back.
Yeah, and it's a great defense.
And it's really become an elite defense in the playoffs. Elite in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And so I think what you just, if you're going to play this style, which is based on reading defense, the problem is my big thing about this offense and why I don't think you can win a championship with it is that you don't get your best players' shots when they need to have them. It's that simple. That's
Coach,
my big thing.
I want to take you back in time to the regular season matchup that went to overtime between Denver and the San Antonio Spurs. Do you remember that game?
Yes.
And I came on this show after that game, because I think I called that game, actually. I was calling that game on Prime. I came on this show after, and I said, here's the difference between the Nuggets and the Spurs. When it comes to crunch time, the Nuggets know what they're running. Mm-hmm. The Spurs are in disarray. And I said, to quote myself on this show, I said, it's good that a game, because we after that game, we were talking about that was a playoff-like game, playoff-like intensity, the refs were letting them play. And I said, it's great for the Spurs that that's happened now in the regular season so that they can go to the drawing board and put some stuff together so that when they get to the playoffs, down the stretch of games, they know what they can run. Here we are heading towards game three of the NBA Finals. And if you ask me to predict what a San Antonio Spurs possession is going to look like down the stretch of a game, I have no idea what to tell you. No. I don't think the San Antonio Spurs have any ideas what to tell you. I'm just going to go through this real quick, right? The game was tied at 97 apiece with 2.5 minutes remaining, right? Mike Brown, successful challenge. OG had 3 free throws, put the Knicks up. Then Fox kind of splits a double team, loses possession of the ball, throws the lob to Wemby. Cool. The Spurs score, excuse me. They go down the other end. OG misses a layup, but there's a scramble for the rebound. The Knicks get possession out of bounds. Then the Knicks run a baseline out of bounds play with Jalen Brunson inbounding the ball. He gets the ball back and he gets a wide open layup. With the smallest guy on the court gets an open layup off a baseline out of bounds. Okay. Then we have a Wembanyama step back corner 3 air ball. Yep. Brunson missed a layup. Uncharacteristic from him. Harper has a layup. That's a goaltend. Then the score is, what, 102-101. And then Mikal Bridges has a turnover on the drive. Dylan Harper does a great job on the fast break. He waits for Wembanyama to catch up with him. He catches the ball behind the three-point line, takes 2 steps and gets an and one. Then going back down, Brunson hits a fall-away mid-range shot, ties the score up at 104 apiece, right? So within all of that, the only gripe I have that is Wemby airballing a corner 3 step back. Like, come on, why are you shooting that shot in such a crucial stage of the game? So they have that timeout now with 39 seconds left. The Spurs called a timeout. Wemby missed a mid-range jump shot. Okay, that's the look they drew up out of the timeout. Then the Knicks call a timeout. Brunson misses the mid-range shot over Wembanyama, but Wembanyama gets possession of the ball, tries to pass it to Castle, who's not even aware that the pass is coming towards him, and it's a turnover. Brunson gets the ball back. Wemby fouls him. Brunson goes to the line. Now, he makes 1 of 2. So you're up by 1. They bring Cornette into the game. But if you go back and watch that sequence, the Knicks were all small ball. They didn't have Cat or Mitchell Robinson in the game. So I'm watching that and I'm thinking, well, if I'm the Spurs, I'm getting this rebound and I'm going to the hole. I'm down by 1. There's 9.5 seconds on the clock.
And they predetermined to call a timeout no matter what.
Yeah. And I'm just looking at it like you can't do that. You have to look at what's happening on the floor and, okay, they've gone small. We're getting this rebound. Run the ball. Every time you go to the hole, you have had success in this game. Run the ball. You got 9.5 seconds. Instead, the Spurs call a timeout. There's 7.5 seconds on the clock. They run a pick and pop. Wembanyama misses, guarded by Mitchell Robinson. The Knicks win the game. The late game management from the Spurs has not changed since that regular season game in Denver. And I can't for the life of me figure out why.
Yeah, no, it's tough. And that's tough. And that's one, as a coach, you don't sleep at night when that happens, because that's when you point the finger at yourself as a coach. Those are the things. Mm. You know, we always talk about accountability and stuff. And I know Mitch is a terrific guy. He's got Sean Sweeney there, the future coach of the Magic. Those are things where you point the finger at yourself. Those are coaching decisions and stuff. When you have a last play on that side out of bounds, that's a coach's. That's when we use the expression, let me participate in the game.
Yeah.
This is when we get to participate. And what I would have told our guys in the timeout, simply, first of all, we all have 10 or 12 plays that we take side out of bounds because 80%+ of all inbounds plays in the NBA are side out. So we have great plays that we run down the stretch. My thing was, I'm telling my guys with 9.5 seconds to go, when we get the ball in bounds, we are driving the ball to the basket. We're going to force the officials to blow the whistle.
Mm-hmm.
Put us on the line. That's what we're doing. And I feel pretty good about it.
Yep.
And I would have. And
you're only down by one. You don't need a three.
No. And I'm saying I would have driven the ball.
Yep.
And the guy I would have given the ball to would Dylan Harper.
Yep.
Because I think fantastic. The guy is an incredible finisher. And he's good with the ball. I'm not giving it to Castle. He's been too erratic handling, and I'm not giving it to Fox because he's not strong enough. That's what I'm giving it
Castle,
to.
Castle and Wembanyama, 4 turnovers apiece. So 12 turnovers from your top 3 players combined. How do you balance as a coach your star player obviously wanting the ball down the stretch of a game, but...
I'm sorry, what? I'm
sorry. How do you balance as a coach
right
when to give your star player the ball? Because I'm looking at it like, if you're the Knicks, you know what they're going to do. They're just going to pass Wembanyama the ball and get out of the way. Surely you would find a way to run something else.
Mo, it's a great question. And it's, to me, it's a simple thing. And people would say, yeah, well, that's obvious. But it's so obvious that people don't do it. My whole offensive philosophy is what their NBA calls clutch time.
Mm-hmm.
I call it crunch time for years.
Yep.
When the game's down the stretch, I am running every play to the player, to the best player on my team who's playing well.
Mm-hmm.
There's been nights where my best players, like I remember many nights when Chuck Day would say, "Hey, we're going to go run this play for so and so." I said, "Chuck, he's 1 for 9.
Yep,
he's 1 for 9. He's normally great, but not tonight." And so we're running for our best guy, and we're running our best plays where we know over time these get us great shots, and then I live with the results.
Yep.
But I'm not taking it random of who might shoot. Mm-hmm. I'm specifically, yeah. And so that's my thing. Best players down the stretch, best shooters, and my job is to get them open shots, open looks, if possible. That's what I'm doing.
I do have to give some level of credit to De'Aaron Fox. I was harsh on him after game 1 down the stretch.
He made some big plays when they were down 14.
Big time in that 14-point comeback. I think between 6 minutes and 3 minutes left in the game.
He was terrific.
It was a 40-point comeback. He was fantastic. Having said that, though, if you are a max player in this league and you're the veteran player on this squad, I am expecting more than 20 points. Like, 20 points is a step up from game 1, but I'm still expecting, you know, you're also the former clutch player of the year, and you run that pick and pop, but it didn't look like you can run a pick and pop in the first quarter of a game in October, and you can run a pick and pop in the NBA. Do you get what I'm saying here? It didn't look like.
That's my point, is that I'm not running any pick and rolls. I'm running something where I get the ball to my guy, and he is driving the ball, so there's no switching or double teaming.
Yeah, I'm running a stagger screen. Harper catches on the move, and he's automatically going downhill. Yeah. I don't care if he scores with time left
exactly
on the clock.
Right. Because I'm getting him the ball at the three-point line, and he is driving to his strong hand, what I call.
Yeah.
And I have a great three-point shooter in the strong side corner in case they get help. And it's not that hard to design. It really isn't.
The other thing, Coach, they had 7.5 seconds left. Here's how I would play it. Obviously, I'm not a coach, so feel free to correct me. But you're down 1 at home with 7.5 seconds left. I'm looking to get the first look I can possibly get, because even if I miss, I could get an offensive rebound. But even if the other team rebounds it, there's still enough time to foul. And if you hadn't wasted your timeout on a possession before, you would have been able to call that timeout and then have a chance at going to overtime with a 3. But that's just me.
Yeah, no, I mean, Yeah, I mean, frankly, you want to get. That's why you want to run what we call a quick hitter to get a shot and get a tap in time. And if it is a miss, foul with 2 seconds to go. So if they make the two free throws, 2 seconds is a lifetime when you have the ball foul line extended on an inbounds play.
Yeah,
you know, to tie it up with a three. You
know? Yep. A quiet night for Champagne, 8 points, two assists.
He's been very poor.
He was great in the first half of game one, but ever since then, the Knicks have adjusted.
Last three halves.
Keldon Johnson, not very impactful.
Can't find him.
Vassell, he kind of here, kind of there. It's tough for the Spurs right now. They're showing their inexperience. You know, I said on my other podcast, the Amazon one, I was talking about it before. I was like,
your second best podcast?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I hope Amazon's not listening to this. But I have creative control over this one. That's the difference. You know what I mean?
Whatever you say.
And they're both great podcasts.
They don't pay me, so I don't give a shit.
It's all right. The coaching association don't pay me, coach. You got to wait to listen to what I have to say. But I said we could be looking at this finals like the 2007 Cavs LeBron finals for LeBron.
Ooh.
Or the 1995 finals for Shaquille O'Neal. In terms of Wembanyama and this being a learning experience, because he is playing uncharacteristically without the composure that we've grown to be accustomed to from this young man. And that's how it's looked through the first two games.
Yeah, and so I agree. You know, everyone said, well, they haven't gone through the normal steps that young teams go through. They haven't. Now the steps might be setting in.
Yeah.
The learning curve, so to speak, you know. But as I said to you earlier, the best thing to happen to them now is to go on the road. Get out of San Antonio, because everyone's been telling them, all they've been talking about is this thing. Now they go to New York. They will not walk out on the streets in New York at all. Mm-hmm. They will be in their hotel. They will never leave it except to go to practice or the game.
Yep.
You know, which is fine. And they will just go and they will come in focused to play. New York will be insane. The environment will be insane and it will help the Spurs.
The other thing that's great about being a young team, and this is something that BJ and I spoke about a lot when we were covering the finals, is older players who have wives and children, they bring them with them on the road during the finals. That doesn't usually happen in the regular season of the playoffs.
No, it's the only time we allow our players to.
Yeah. Oftentimes that can be somewhat of a hindrance for players. Not that there's anything wrong with it, but it's just you've got other responsibilities now. You've got to make time for them. You've got to, you know, make sure they're good. Whereas a young team like this, I don't know how many of the Spurs are married and have kids and so on and so forth, but I don't know if Wembanyama, Castle, Harper, Carter Bryant, maybe Vassell. I don't know. I know Fox has got a family, but do you know what I mean? I think like for them, this would be like a regular road trip. Maybe they take their families, maybe they don't, but it's a lot easier for them to travel than an older team.
Yeah, I think their families will be up there, like Wimby's parents and stuff like that. But they're you know, they're possibly in their hotel, but they're, you know, separate rooms and stuff.
Yeah, they
like
have a different floor for the families.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, but it is difficult. It is difficult. Distractions. It's the only time that we have this during the season, which is unusual. But it never bothered us, frankly, to be honest with you.
Different generation, you know, coach. Different era, different time.
We won 8 out of 9, baby. That's all. Hey. I don't know if I ever told you that.
You might have mentioned it just once or twice.
Just once a show.
Just once or twice. A day.
And all I know is I think there's more pressure on President Trump going to game three than is on the Spurs.
Yep.
If the Knicks lose with him at the game, they'll boo him out of the building.
Here's the thing. Knicks center Mitchell Robinson is a huge fan of Donald Trump. And someone on TikTok said Mitchell Robinson's going to be playing extra hard because Donald Trump's going to be there in game three. And Mitchell Robinson replied saying, hell yeah. So Mitch Robinson is an interesting character. I want to talk about one player on the Knicks. And I never thought I would ask this question in my life, coach. I never thought that these words would come out of my mouth. how has Karl-Anthony Towns become a good defender?
You know, I've had several players on championship teams that when we got them, we said, this guy can't guard.
Mm-hmm.
But when you put a team that understands team defense together, they learn how to be part of it. Plus, he's now understands what winning has done. Now he believes. He's always had good coaching from high school all the way up through Calipari, Kentucky and stuff. He's really been well coached through his career. So I just love it that the guy, he's shown he's such a smart guy and he's so intelligent and he's so caring. You know, I think the guy's really incredibly happy in his life,
yeah,
which makes a big difference.
You can see that in his interviews and everything.
Unbelievable.
And he's been through a lot, losing his mother and all sorts of stuff. And everyone I speak to who knows him, like I have a few mutual friends, they all say the best things about him. You never hear people mm-hmm. say a bad word about Carl, the person. No. You can say what you want about him as a basketball player previously in his career. People won't say a bad word about him as a person, but now... Here's one. I got a text from someone the other day, and they said to me, if the Knicks win this series and win the championship, is Karl-Anthony Towns' reputation fixed? And what he means by that is the reputation of being a bad defender, just being, you know, the things people have said about him previously. I said it's already fixed. I said I've seen enough through this playoff run that I'm not going into next season saying, you can beat the Knicks by bringing Brunson and...
championship player, yeah. No, totally. He's an all-star.
The narrative around him has now shifted dramatically.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you want to look at things, you say, who should have been an all-pro, him or Jalen Duren?
Him or Chet Holmgren?
Counting the playoffs.
Him or Chet Holmgren? I hope Chet Holmgren. I said, do you know what's really funny, Coach?
Think about that.
When I was broadcasting game one, live on the broadcast, I said, I hope Chet Holmgren is at home watching Karl-Anthony Towns right now and taking notes. I don't know if anyone in the studio found it funny, but I found it funny. But it's very true because,
here's what I see, Mo. I see mature Knicks team versus an immature Spurs team.
Yes. And the togetherness of the Knicks really stands out.
When you're 22, you can't get older. You know, you can't improve your life and stuff. These guys have gone through a lot on the Knicks in their careers, from Landry Shamet. You know, all these guys have gone through a bunch, and you know, Karl-Anthony Towns and stuff. I just think that they finally all get. I mean, think about the guy that's played the most consecutive games in NBA now, Mikal Bridges. It's on his third team, technically fourth. Drafted by Philly, traded that draft
Phoenix, to Phoenix, then Brooklyn.
Brooklyn to now them.
Well, at least he didn't have to move house.
The guy's a rock.
Yep.
The guy's a rock. OG?
Yep.
My God.
You ain't going to tell me twice.
He's one of the best players. I mean, he's incredible. Where is he from?
Well, he is of Nigerian descent, but he lived in the UK for a little while growing up. So... I claim him as UK. He doesn't claim... He said something funny the other day. He said... he's doing some stuff in the UK. I don't want to leak the information. Like he's involved with some projects and stuff, right? But he said, yeah, look at me, showing love to the city that shows no love for me. I said, what do you mean? When he was here last summer, he tried to go to a restaurant in his team tracksuit just casually after a workout, and the restaurant wouldn't let him in because they didn't know who he was. Because it's the UK, right? And I'm like, if the owner of the restaurant knew that the guy walking through the door had signed a $200 million contract, he would have rolled out a damn red carpet for you, bro. Unfortunately,
could have bought the restaurant from the guy.
Yeah. Unless you're LeBron or Luka or Wembanyama, he ain't going to know you, bro. That's just the UK for you. But I'm saying we got He's UK amazing. NBA champion. Well, two more wins to go, but OG, I don't know.
What a fabulous player he is.
Yeah. Oh, no, he's amazing. His confidence, his strength, his versatility on the defensive side of the ball. He can go out and guard guards. He can go and guard Wembanyama. He is a huge addition to this team, and a lot of people said he was overpaid. He's worth every penny of that contract that the Knicks gave him. Mikal Bridges has been worth every one of those draft picks if they win a championship. Jalen Brunson, his first contract, obviously the second one, he took a $100 million pay cut, but his first contract, they said he was overpaid. He's been worth every single penny. And, you know, a lot of this Knicks team, we have to show some appreciation to our former co-host, Mr. Scott Perry, because while he was in New York, he was at the helm when they signed Jalen Brunson, when they traded for Josh Hart, when they drafted Mitchell Robinson. So that's three of the key pieces of this team, and Deuce McBride, I believe, as well. So four of the key pieces of this team come from Mr. Perry. So any Kings fans listening to this, all you have to do now is wait for like 6 years-ish, and you might be in the NBA Finals.
Good job, Scott. Yeah. No, it's I really appreciate their team, where they've come. Yeah. And they are in a phenomenal position.
Yep, and they're two wins away.
I'll tell you what, boy, it's going to be a nice ride home to New York.
Yep.
My Lord. Wow.
So moving to game three. I mean, I've got the Knicks winning both of those games at home. I think the momentum's rolling. They got the crowd behind them. Do you think the Spurs can steal one?
I still think they have a great shot. I really do. I think they have a great shot to win game three, the Spurs. I really do. I think they'll come in very, very hungry. They'll come in. The atmosphere will be so insane. I think they have a shot. You know, and if they don't get game three, then it's KD by the door.
Yeah. You know,
and not that they'll get swept, but it puts, you know, the hardest thing to do, as we've talked about on the show before, is to close out. So, you know, if they do, if they do get game three or four, the good chance they're going to get game five. And now we're at that 6-game series, you know, like we thought from the beginning, if the Knicks were going to win, they're winning at six. You know, so I still don't change from that, to be honest.
Yeah,
I'm still going with a 6-game Knicks thing.
Oh, wow. Sweet. Wow. I think with the way that Wembanyama threw the game away, like literally threw the ball to Brunson that led to the free throws that won the game.
And then fouled him.
Yeah. I'm expecting a generational Wembanyama performance in game three. I'm expecting him to bounce back and have a monster performance going to his first finals game on the road in MSG. I'm expecting a monster performance. Like, because we're talking about him like he's going to be one of the all-time greats. I want to see it. I need to see it. But tough times for the Spurs. No, great times for the Knicks.
He's, you know, all the hype in the last series is getting a little exposed. Mr. Towns is exposing some of his shortcomings right now.
Yeah.
Mainly his strength and experience.
Yeah, and I mean, Karl-Anthony Towns was a player who dealt with some level of hype. He was the number one pick. I remember the GM survey the year he got drafted, and 42% of GMs said they would rather have Karl-Anthony Towns than LeBron or Kevin Durant. And this is when LeBron and Kevin Durant were in their primes. So he had some level of hype, not quite Wembanyama level of hype. And look how long it's taken him to finally get close to climbing the mountaintop.
Yeah.
You know, Minnesota, and then now over with the Knicks. Tough for Minnesota as well, because that trade, you know, when you have trades, you can't really evaluate them straight away. And people are saying it's a win-win trade, and DiVincenzo and Randle are great. But look at it now. I think that's kind of swayed public perception of that. If people
look at that trade right now, it is so lopsided.
Yep.
And
I want to say that the player that Karl-Anthony Towns is for the Knicks right now is the best version of Karl-Anthony Towns that I've seen. Better than any version
like
I saw
in Minnesota. No, he wasn't.
He was not at all
like
this.
And he could not become that with the big fella there.
Yeah, with Rudy. Because they traded for Rudy to make up for the fact that he wasn't a good defender.
Exactly right.
But the Knicks have just forced him to step up and be the good defender. Because, you know, when he got traded to the Knicks, we were talking about, are they going to play him at the four and Mitch Robinson at the five? But they found something. And this is something that I was thinking about as well, Coach. You know, when I say we, as an NBA community, you know, a lot of the media, fans, people in the league, so on and so forth, have talked for the last couple of years about the game going back to having two bigs. You know, we looked at the Bucks winning their championship. We looked at the Celtics with Paul Zingas and Horford. We look at what the Cavs have built, so on and so forth. But we've got two teams in the finals. That's one big and four smalls.
Well, four guards, frankly.
Yeah.
Four guards on the Spurs.
Yep.
And a couple of, I guess you'd call OG a forward.
Yeah, only because he's so strong. But forward.
Josh Hart a forward.
But size-wise, they're playing one big lineup.
When Josh Hart goes out, then they're going to Shamit and, OG as the four, basically. Mm-hmm. But I tell you what, OG is something else, boy. And I'll tell you what, Brunson is a tough son of a gun, boy.
Yep.
He struggled down the stretch again. He's not shooting the ball. He makes timely shots.
Yep. He's not afraid tonight, at the moment. That's the biggest part.
Yeah. And you know what? He's got that incredible thing that you can't teach people about his, as soon as he does something good or bad, he deletes it immediately. Yep. From his mentality.
Onto the next play. Next play mentality is what we call it.
Which is so hard to teach people.
Yep.
Amazing kid.
I did love him. He got fouled by Fox and he kind of stared him down. And then out of nowhere, Rick Brunson spawns on the other end of the court. And I see Tony Brothers say to him, what are you even doing down here?
Exactly right. I was saying the same thing. I yelled at him, get your ass back. And I love Rick.
That was pretty funny.
He's lucky he didn't get teed up,
Yeah, that was a great game. I'm looking forward to games 3 and 4. We'll see if the Knicks could sweep it. We'll see if New York turns into Gotham City and sets on fire if they do. We'll see if the Spurs can claw some games back. But either way, we'll be here rocking it with you. So stay locked in to the Hoop Genius podcast. Make sure you subscribe on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcast from. And to the Knicks fans, enjoy your weekend. I have never, ever known that there were so many of you. A lot of you have been real quiet for a real long time. Now, all of a sudden, my inbox is filled with you. I appreciate the success. I respect it. And you know what, Coach, actually, before we get out of here, I want to share a personal anecdote. A friend of mine messaged me saying, Mo, you need to, because I'm a Celtics fan, right? So it's expected that I hate the Knicks. They messaged me, they said, Mo, you're being way too nice about the Knicks on your broadcast. I said, you know what? I think I've finally become a grown-up. It's taken me 31 years, but I'm genuinely in a position where I'm happy for the Knicks, and I'm happy for the... Don't get me wrong, I'm not happy for Arsenal, but we're starting one step at a time with the NBA first. I'm happy for the Knicks, and I'm happy for their fans that after generations of suffering, because it's not just people, the kids that have never seen their team win, their parents have never seen their team win. So... generations of suffering. No disrespect, Coach. I know you had a little bit of time with the Knicks and it wasn't quite as sweet as your Piston days. But for that to come to an end, if they can close this out, don't get me wrong, I will be making my jokes if they collapse from a 2-0 lead and home court advantage. Don't get me wrong now. But I don't think they will. But I'm happy for them. I'm happy for them. Enjoy it. Have a great weekend. And we'll be back. When's the next game? Monday night?
Monday night.
So we'll be back Tuesday morning. And until next time, get buckets.